All right. Oh. Let's see. Yep. Okay. Wasn't sure if my mic was connected. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Office Hours, July 1st. It's a Monday here. We've got a handful of questions to dig into, some stuff that came in over the weekend. We do, of course, have the Birdie Battle prizes for this week to hand out. So we'll get into that in just a second. As always, this is an open Q&A show here. So if you have questions for me today about Saber Sim, DFS strategy, whatever, fire away in the chat or in the Office Hours channel in Discord. We'll get things started with the Birdie Battle here. We've got a couple weeks left on this. I think 3 weeks left, actually, to be precise. Yeah. 3 weeks left here, so still an opportunity to take home some pretty cool prizes here, even if you didn't get a chance to participate most of the year here. I'm not going to walk through the full pitch on this here today, just again because there are 3 weeks left, mostly getting to the point of wrapping this up here. But promo.sabersim.com, if you want to go to this page yourself, it'll walk through what the prizes are that are available here. If you were to sign up for the last 3 weeks here and play, you do still have some pretty cool opportunities, an opportunity to get into the free roll at the end of the season that we're giving away Masters tickets for. So details on that to come. The custom Sabersim golf gear. If you finish in the top place, you can get a golf hat. You can, of course, win some tickets to the next week's Birdie here. So some cool prizes. Basically, all it takes is have a Sabersim subscription. I'm sure most of you watching do. Use the Sabersim logo on DraftKings and then fill out this quick form and then just max the Birdie next week. And the following weeks here, you get an opportunity for some of those winnings. So we do need to announce the winners here from the Rocket Mortgage this weekend. First things first, a congratulations to MTH1321 in eighth place with 636 points here. So a winner of, I gotta remind myself, I keep getting them mixed up. Oh yeah, we were just looking at it. So the golf hat and a ticket to the free roll here coming at the end of the major season. We haven't really decided what week that's going to be yet, but sometime before the tour championship, probably hopefully earlier in the playoffs. So it's kind of a big field event, but we're still figuring out what day that's going to be. But congratulations to MTH. It was the big birdie this week. I actually missed it, unfortunately. I didn't realize they were doing the large prize pool for that, for the Micro Millions promotion. So was a pretty tough contest just because it was so big. A lot of entries to beat, so a sixth place finish, pretty high up there. Congratulations to MTH. And then we do, of course, give away free tickets to next week's contest to one winner. So we've got to do that here as well. We'll get the goofy wheel of names up here again. We've been using this for a long time to do these giveaways, and every time I pull this up, I feel like it's funny that this is our solution here, but it is, and it's worked well for us. So let's go ahead here and fire it away. 90 maxers this week. We'll see who's winning the ticket. For the John Deere. Congratulations, Brian. I do like how dramatic the wheel of names makes it. I will have to. I'm not logged in here, so I can't edit the sheet, but I do like how dramatic the wheel of names makes it. It always feels like it, especially in that final turn, really drums it up. You never know what's going to happen exactly there. So, Brian, big bets. Congratulations, and of course, MTH, congratulations to you as well here. So, let me find somewhere to stick these names since I'm not logged into the sheet, so I don't forget. You should get an email before the end of the day today about the winnings. I think the tickets take like a day or two to show up in your DraftKings account, and then Madison from our team will reach out to about the other prizes here. So, cool. That's it for the Birdie Battle stuff. Let's go ahead and start talking some DFS here. Some questions. Kind of a weird baseball day today. There is a two-game night slate. There was a three-game day slate that kicked off about an hour ago. Kind of a quiet day of baseball. I'm not really sure why. Does anybody know? I'm curious if there's any reason why the baseball is scheduled this way here for today in particular. I'd be curious. I'm not really really sure. Just a very quiet day. I know Mondays are tend to be a little bit of the smaller slates anyway, but a very, very quiet day of baseball. But that's okay. We still have some slates we can talk about here. I know there are some questions about golf, so we'll get an opportunity to talk about golf as well here. But let's go ahead and get into it here. We'll kick things off going back to last week, answering a couple questions that came in the Discord here the Discord here. It sounds like people say for the 4th of July holiday. Yeah, the 4th of July baseball DFS is always a fun one here. What do we have? Do we have? So, yeah, I mean, oh, no, we just don't know the slates yet. So I'm sure they have a full day. I do like 4th of July baseball. I think it's quietly one of the better holiday DFS sports. Like Christmas Day basketball has always been really fun. That's always like one of my favorite slates to play. Now that there's football on Christmas Day too, that's great. Obviously a fan of that, but the basketball is my favorite there. And then obviously Thanksgiving football. I think 4th of July baseball is quietly a pretty good one. Like I always look forward to that slate. Maybe they'll do something fun with the contest. I don't know. Maybe make something a little bit bigger there. So I guess that makes sense. You got to like, I don't know, maybe teams are traveling or whatever today, but this is from Henry here earlier this last week. When I build golf showdown lineups, round two and round three, over 75% have a negative sim ROI in the $1.20 max win simming against the standard field lineups, mostly default settings. Should I expect more positive ROI lineups in my pool or just the nature of golf? When simming against my build, almost everything is positive ROI, which feels off. Yeah, it is an interesting question. I know there was a follow-up question too, where Henry mentioned that the field lineups for Golf Showdown is only 1,000 in the app. Two things on that. One, we sometimes don't show the entire field in the field lineups section when you actually go and pull it up. So if I pull up Golf Showdown here, for some sports, like if you pull up a baseball field, it'll say, I think 5,000 or 10,000 or something like that, that are actually in the field there. Even though on the back end, it's actually a 20,000 lineup field. I don't know if that's happening here. I'm going to check with the team and follow up on that. Either way, I think that's possible that's happening. And otherwise, it's a little bit strange that it's only 1,000 lineup fields. I actually didn't know that until this question came in. It feels like we probably should have the ability to make larger PGA Showdown fields pretty easily. So I will forward that along and see what's going on there. I will mention that it's not necessarily indicative. I don't think that anything's wrong if a lot of your portion of the field isn't showing up as profitable in a given contest. That'll happen from time to time. I especially notice it on like higher sim diversity sports or smaller slates in particular for like team-based baseball sports. A lot of those lineups can be eliminated. Like it can be hard to build profitable lineups. And the other thing to remember too is, you know, your lineups when they are being built, they don't, this sounds silly, but they don't know if they're profitable, right? What they are is they are the best possible lineup for a given way that the slate could play out. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that lineup's going to be profitable against the field relative to its ownership, right? The way I kind of think about it is like an NFL showdown, I think is a really good example, or at least it makes more sense in my head, is like when you end up that the game's over and you see that it's this giant dupe train that ended up taking it down. That's like one of the sims that was used in your pool being built and not showing up as a profitable lineup. That's basically what the slate looked like, right? It was too chalky or too just straight up duped that it's not getting paid off enough for that particular outcome of the round taking place. So it's not showing up as profitable. And that the lineups when they're being built, I don't know that ahead of time. So all of this to say it is to be expected that a lot of your pool is not going to be profitable or that it is possible for that to happen. The other thing too is you will notice this more in high variance sports because you are getting a pool that has a very wide range of outcomes itself, right? You're almost building a pool that is somewhat representative of the entire possible range of outcomes. Well, because of the way that these payout structures work and the field and the prizes are so top heavy, so much of the equity is in, you know, the top 0.1% of a contest. If you're building in a very high variance way where your range of outcomes is very wide in the pool that you are constructing, it's not possible for all of those different outcomes to be profitable because you are building some of the bad lineups that your opponents are going to play that make your good lineups themselves profitable, right? Like, you're seeing the entire possible range of outcomes, and you need some of those lineups to be bad to know that the good lineups are good. If you compare that to a sport like NBA, where your sim diversity slider is going to be lower, you're not building a pool of lineups that's intended to attack the full possible range of outcomes of the slate. You are trying to build a lot of combinations around the elite projection values that exist because players more reliably hit those projections. It's good chalk is better. It's easy for players to hit those outcomes. You'll have a pool that almost the entire pool will be profitable because you didn't build any of the bad lineups, right? And then in a normally distributed sport, it's easier for us to know what the good lineups are ahead of time because it's the best projected plays. So since sim diversity comes down, we don't know as easily what the good lineups are before you build in a very high variance sport. So you have to build out the full pool and kind of test it out, right? Hopefully that makes sense. So I think all of this to say, it is not bad necessarily by any means to have a portion or a large portion of your pool be unprofitable in the contest sim. And I think the higher your sim diversity slider is by default for that sport, and the higher the variance of the sport itself is, the more you should expect to see that, because you're building lineups for a wider range of outcomes there. The less, and it's not, I'm not necessarily saying the way I don't want anyone listening to take this is, oh, I should just turn my sim diversity slider down so my lineups grade out as more profitable. That's not the point here. The point is really at what point in the process can you kind of decide how wide or how narrow you want your range of outcomes you're attacking in your lineups to be. And for sports where players are normally distributed, they hit their projections reliably or more reliably, like basketball, you can do that. So you'll get a more functional and more profitable pool. In higher variant sports, you kind of can't. So it was a good question here. And if I totally lost anyone here, don't know what I'm talking about, especially Henry, who asked this question, if you're here with me and you're confused, please let me know. But I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that's fine. So, and it's an argument in favor of contest sims, to be totally honest. So I will check though on the small fields that are showing up in the app and just see if that's really how big the fields are that are being used there, or if we can bump those up or what's going on there. So, see a couple questions in YouTube chat already trickling in here. We'll get to those in just a second. I'm going to continue to get caught up on the Discord channel here first. And we'll hit this question from Chuck. And this is a follow-up question to what we talked about on Friday. So I'm going to read this question, and I'm going to answer this question for Chuck, knowing that he's seen this video. If I lose you completely here in this section and you don't know what's going on, check out the office hours from Friday. And if you're on a pro or an ultimate subscription on SaberSim, check out the two most recent pro videos. We've been playing around with this idea of running a contest sim against itself as a way to create a more balanced portfolio recently. That is all I'm going to summarize about that previous content, because if I go down this rabbit hole again, I'm going to talk for the next 45 minutes about it. So I'm going to stop myself and focus on the actual question here. But if I lose you, you don't know what I'm talking about. That's where to go for the context here. So Chuck asks, I have a follow-up question, comments to the previous office hours against simming against different plausible fields. An approach I came up with is simming against the field intended for the contest being entered, but after running a contest sim and eliminating negative ROI lineups, downloading the remaining lineups and uploading the new pool back to the build. Okay. Then repeat this process as needed. My thinking is that each contest sim uses a different sample of sims, so repeating this process over and over again ensures that the lineups taken into your account are resilient as possible to variations between the projected SaberSim field and the actual field lineups. Would love to hear your thoughts on this. Okay. I think I get what you're saying here, Chuck. If I'm reading it correctly, and I might be wrong, I don't think this is actually a good use of your time, unfortunately. What I am understanding is you're going in. Let's see. Can I find a slate of games that isn't three games? If I'm understanding this correctly, you are building lineups. You are running contest sim. You are filtering lineups that are profitable in contest sim, re-uploading to a new blank build and re-simming again. I think you could accomplish that, what that gives you, much faster just by setting a higher floor for the initial contest sim. You are right. There's going to be a little bit of variance in the way that those lineups are graded, right? You might have a lineup, especially at the bottom, you might have a lineup that comes out as 3% ROI the first time you build your lineups. But then in the ensuing contest sim, when you re-upload it, which really you don't even need to do in this case, you could just run the contest sim over and over again. But the next contest sim, maybe it shows up as negative 0.5% ROI, and then it shows up as 1% ROI. There is a little bit of variance there. I think what you essentially get out of that, if you were to do that, is sure, if you did that, you know, a ton of times, you might have a better sense of what the actual true ROI was of a lineup. But I think you could just raise your floor of saying, I'm going to just eliminate every lineup that's under 10% instead. And then that would effectively make you more confident that you're playing lineups that grade out as profitable, right? Like, first of all, the sample size issue of contest sims is pretty well handled by the fact that we are running 100,000 of them. I forgot we got rid of that field. There used to be a field here that said like number of sims, and now it just is always 100,000 because it's easy for us to do that. And why would anybody want to run less? So we're already running the contest sim 100,000 times, right? Like that's pretty good. I think there's an argument that maybe at really large field contests, that number should be bigger. And maybe that's when you'd get the most value out of running it over and over and over again and taking the average of that. But I think if you just raised your floor of your filter of like, I'm only going to play lineups that are at least 25% profitable, 10% profitable, something like that, well, then all of a sudden, like even accounting for some variance in the actual number that you get, you're accounting for that. Either way, like I think this is kind of incremental. I don't even want to give the impression to other people that like, oh, this is something I should think about, that the variance of the number, because it doesn't matter a ton. And the bigger variance, the variance that we've been talking about that is not accounted for in SaberSim, that is important, and a lot of these conversations have stemmed from, is the ownership variance, right? The sims that are selected in your contest sim variance is marginal because the process is being repeated again 100,000 times. The ownership projection variance is a lot higher, especially because of the fact that it's constant, right? That's kind of the big, like over 100,000 iterations. We're saying we're playing the contest out 100,000 times, but in all of them, who is this? Freddy Peralta is always 39.94% owned, right? That's the kind of variance that some of this new process stuff that we've been working on and talking about here is intended to try to bite into, because that's wrong. We know that's wrong. But the idea that you should have seen 11.5% sims where the Brewers scored over 7 runs, and instead you got 11.4% because of the way your sims were selected, I don't think makes a huge difference. So, but possible I misunderstood some of this. I know Chuck often watches these live here. So Chuck, if you're here and you have questions, or if I misunderstood you, the part of the message that you had originally sent that lost me just a tad was an approach. So you said approach I came up with was simming against the field intended for the contest sim. So I'm assuming that's against like the original SaberSim fields, right? But after running a contest sim and eliminating, like, it seems like maybe there is actually a self sim tucked into your process here that you're talking about, that there's actually, so I will mention, and then we'll move on and get to some other questions here in a second. I did used to do a version of this process where I would take the initial pool of lineups. I would run the contest sim against the normal field lineups. I would X out everything under 0% ROI, almost do exactly what Chuck is saying here. Download that set of lineups, re-upload to another build, and self-sim that against itself. That's actually how my self-sim started. The reason I started doing that was a diversification thing. I was saying, instead of using min uniques or exposures or something like that to diversify, I'm going to just try to compete all of the potential lineups I might play against each other and see which ones kind of win. And I think there's some value there. But as I talked to Matt and Chris and thought about this more, what I realized is that I think the bigger value of running the self-sim that you run in your entire pool of 5,000 lineups is that being a semi-plausible field that also contains unprofitable lineups. Like, I think it is important that that field has bad lineups in it so you can really see what the good ones are. Similar to what we were just talking about, right? With the PGA Showdown stuff, it's kind of, when you're using contest sims, you kind of want that, you kind of need whatever you're setting as your field to actually contain some level of plausibly bad lineups so that the sim makes sense. And when you're filtering out lineups and only picking good ones and running the self sim on that, I think you lose some of the information about what the best possible lineups are to play from that pool, because you've eliminated some of the lineups that are giving the profitability to other lineups. So I prefer to keep it as kind of a big field now. So again, I'll mention it one more time, just in case. If you don't know what I'm talking about, last Friday's office hours on the YouTube channel, the pro videos, two most recent pro videos in the pro Discord, because kind of a lot of these conversations based on some of that. So, all right, hang tight, YouTube crowd. We've got two other questions to get to in Discord that came in before the show. So I want to get those first, and then we'll get to the live chat. This question from David here is, are the lineups chosen for my pool the lineups that win a sim? So the actual best optimal lineup for a particular sim. Would this also mean that the ownership projections are based on how many winning lineups a player was in during the sim? Yeah, they kind of are. So I will explain how I conversationally think about and describe what actually happens when you build lineups, and then try to give a more specific answer of what is literally happening. I think the way that you can think about what is happening here, which is a helpful way for me to think about it, is each lineup you build is the best possible lineup to play in a GPP for a given outcome of the way that the games could play out on the slate. So we're taking essentially a simulation of the slate and saying, okay, if it plays out this way, what's the best GPP lineup to play, right? So you're getting kind of a representative sample of the slate when you look at it that way. What is actually literally happening here is it's a relationship between these two sliders. And I think it's easiest to just think about the sim diversity slider first and assume correlation is off, because correlation ends up kind of sitting on top of what happens on the sim diversity. So it's easiest to think about sim diversity first. So the sim diversity slider determines how many sims are sampled for each lineup we build. So if sim diversity is at zero, you are just building on the average projections. In other words, for each lineup we are building, we are sampling the entire set of possible simulations. So a player's projection that they score for every lineup is just their average. At sim diversity 10, it is the opposite. It is a single simulation for each game on the slate is selected and used as the player's projections and that game's projections really for that particular slate. So it's no variance. And then extremely high variance, single game variance, zero variance, right? So this is determining basically how wide the range of outcomes are for a game's projections, right? A player's and a game's projections in each lineup that we build. And this is adjusted based on the contest, the size of the slate, and the sport based on what we have found in backtesting this slider gives you the most effective pool, the most useful and functional and profitable pool possible here. So it kind of changes. You'll see sports where you need to nail very nearly the optimal lineup. This will be a 10. At sports where ranges of outcomes in general are wider and we want to capture that, you'll see this higher. In sports where you don't need the optimal win, where ranges of outcomes are more narrow, like NBA, you'll see this come down, sometimes even being at like 3, 4, 5, depending on the contest. So that's what this slider is doing. The correlation slider I mentioned kind of sits on top of this. And it is a boost to player correlations above and beyond what happens in the sim diversity slider. So sim diversity, for example, right? If you built like this on SaberSim, what you will see end up happening is a lot for baseball. You'll see a lot of like little mini stacks show up. So like if you were building for like a large field GPP, and these are your default sliders, but you turn correlation off, you'll see a bunch of little mini stacks. And we could actually run this while I'm talking about it, just so you can kind of see this here. You see a lot of mini stacks show up, threes. You might see some five stacks, maybe a handful, some little bit of four stacks, but mostly like threes and two stacks. Now what's happening there is a very small bucket of simulations is being used, not a single sim and not all of the sims, but a very small grouping of simulations is being used as the working projections for each lineup built. And there might be sims in there where the Phillies score 9 runs, but they don't actually individually, the individual players don't score enough points so that a 5 stack is justified, because this is solving for the best possible scoring lineup for that simulation of the slate. But you don't need literally the best possible scoring lineup in that case, right? So if we look at the stacks here, you can see what I'm talking about. So my camera's kind of in the way, so I'm looking all goofy here. But most common stacks showing up 2-2, 2-3-2, and so on, right? The reason for that is because in those sims that are pulled out of the lineup builder here, where this is set this way, like it's not, even if the Phillies scored 9 runs, it didn't make sense to use any more than 3 of them because enough players hit one-off homers and scored other points elsewhere that stacking didn't make sense. But you don't need the perfect optimal to beat a baseball tournament. You need to beat all of your opponents. And it's very hard to win a 9-player hitting parlay, and it's unnecessary to take that amount of risk. So we introduce correlation into our lineups. And we say, I'm going to try to be directionally correct and try to benefit from a bunch of players outscoring their average projection by picking and stacking a team that scores well over their implied team total, knowing that I'm not probably going to score literally the highest scoring lineup possible, but I'm going to score a lot of points relative to the other players in my contest. That's kind of where the correlation comes from in baseball. So we add this correlation slider in to say, hey, SaberSim, when you build these lineups, pull from a given sim, but also give a little bit of an extra boost based on how we see players tend to be correlated to one another on average, right? When you, man, what was this Yankees lineup they played yesterday? I'm like looking here, looking for a recognizable name here amongst the list so I can show off some Yankees correlations. It didn't look like their best lineup. Here, let's do the Phillies instead. So when you play Trey Turner, it's saying, and because he had a good game in that sim, it's saying, hey, you know what? Be a little bit more willing to put Brandon Marsh and Bryson Stott and Alec Boehm in that lineup because they are going to do well in general in the outcomes where Trey Turner does well. So we're adding in that correlation factor. So that's kind of how the lineups are picked. So going back to the original question, did they literally win the sim? If this is your slider settings, yes, that is literally the optimal scoring lineup for a single simulation of the slate. As this number comes down, you're starting to look at groupings of sims for a given slate. And as this number comes up, you are starting to add in you're starting to basically feed the correlations back in to the way that the lineups end up getting built. So that's why, coming back all the way full circle, I like to think about it as the lineup that you get is the best possible lineup for the GPP that you have outlined here for a given simulation of the slate, because that's kind of what the sliders are intended to do. They're not literally intended to be the optimal lineups unless you have specifically requested that with 0-10, but they're intended to be the best possible, you know, GPP lineup you could have built for a given way that the slate could play out. So the follow-up question, would this also mean that SaberSim ownership are based on how many winning lineups a player was in during the sims? So the ownership projections are built, and this has gotten more complicated, like more complicated in a good way. Our ownership models have gotten a lot more robust since we created contest sims. And now that we have field lineups, originally our ownership projections were exactly as they sound. They're just projections. They were just like, you know, this guy's going to be in 3.8% of lineups. It's more important to actually know what those lineups look like and what the entire field itself looks like. So we've put in a lot of work into what the ownership and the field lineup model looks like. It does still use the SaberSim builder as a baseline. So when we're building out the fields, it is still leveraging the same build logic that you kind of see in the app. It's a little bit different on the ownership side in the way that that actually ends up working. But the simplest answer is yes, it is a similar system. The main difference, though, is the ownership model takes into account an industry. It takes into account what other projection models are saying. So I don't know if it's literally an average anymore. In fact, I think it's not, but it does take into account other projection models and what we actually think the field is likely to do above and beyond just SaberSim users. But it is using the SaberSim builder logic as a part of that. So, and I think that's mostly a good thing, particularly because it's really fast. And it's very our reach is very wide, right? We have ownership projections for every sport we have sims for, every slate, every showdown, every turbo, every night slate. Like, we project ownership on literally everything. I don't think anybody else does that or even comes close, because it's an automated intelligent system that works on its own for the most part, with a little bit of manual review and tweaking and things like that here or there. So. And it's also very fast. Our ownership projections update about as quickly as the projections update, because it runs on its own. So, okay. One more question in Discord, and then we're going to YouTube chat from Larson. Let's see. What is the best way to get one-off bats into lineups without creating a full stack for the team? I typically add one to the min exposure, but sometimes it creates a full stack with that team versus just finding a spot to add that batter. Okay. So, I mean, I think the way that you would do this, if you wanted to, is... I gotta move this camera back a little bit. This is driving me nuts. I'm trying to see my screen here. Actually, let me move you guys over here. Hang on. I'm trying something here. Okay, you can still see. That's better. So one thing you could do here is, like, you could cap your exposure to the team, right? So let's try to make this build like something we would actually do. So let's say this is your build and you want to go get more... Alvarez, maybe, as an example, but you want one-off Alvarez. So you could do something like, okay, I have, oops, that's annoying. So you could go and like look at how much Houston you have, and you have 10%. So you could cap this at 11%. Oops. And then go to your Alvarez and say, I have 17%. Maybe say you want that to be 25% and then tell SaberSim to solve this. I don't think it's going to like it. Let's see if it works. Did it work? Oh, that's ownership. Whoops. 25%. Hold on. I'm trying to make sure my 11% max and Alvarez is at 25%, and then we apply. Okay, let's see. So that, I think, worked. I hate this search bug. I know some of you do too, where it, like, I guess it's not even really a bug, but it just like searches across the other columns. So that kind of works. So that's like a way to do that. I'll tell you what though, like, you're going to run into walls pretty quickly doing that. For if you do that to a bunch of different batters, because we, at the end of the day, we want to build correlated teams, right? So if you tell SaberSim, hey, I want more Alvarez, it's going to want to give you some Astro stacks. The number of lineups in your pool where he's truly used as a one-off are limited. So if you're going crazy with this and you're doing this with a bunch of different batters, you're ultimately going to end up seeing the can't reach desired exposures message. And if you attempt to rebuild, it probably will reach everything, but like you're shooting for a pretty thin middle there. What I would do instead, and not even necessarily instead, but just something to consider and something that I've messed around with here, is try to see if you can come up with a rule that is just more like, what are you trying to actually accomplish with your one-offs? I will show you this rule. This is something that I have gone back and forth on using in the past. Let me see if you guys can see that clearly. I've gone back and forth on using this here in the past. At the moment, for full disclosure, I'm not using this frequently because I think our sims have gotten into a pretty good spot where it's less necessary than it used to be. But this is a rule that basically says, if a player is being used in the lineup whose home run odds, which is like me thinking, trying to think through what does one-off upside look like, and a lot of times I think it's home runs. If that player is used in the lineup and their home runs are less than this, sometimes goes like, I'll put this between like 0.13 to 0.16 ish. I'll typically, the way I actually come up with that number is I'll just look at the hitters on the slate and just kind of sort by home runs. And I'll just literally look for, okay, who's the first name that I actually would not play as a one-off. And I've just found a lot of times it's like around 0.13, 0.14. That's literally just, I don't have anything more scientific than that. It's just an eyeball test there. And I'll set it that. And then I'll say, if that player's used, use at least three other players from the same team. So basically put them in a four stack. So that what that the reverse of that is only use players with home run upside as one-offs. And that, I think, will build your lineups in a way that maybe makes a little bit more sense if this is the way you think about it. I don't think you have to do this necessarily, but I've done this as a value add before. That might be a better way of doing this, because I think SaberSim, like the builder and the solver on the with the exposures and min uniques, is going to get a little confused if you start to basically say, don't use these correlated players together, right? It's a better situation oftentimes for a lineup rule. Very similar situation comes up in football season every year. Will inevitably, if you guys stick around for football season, hang out in the Discord on a Sunday morning and you want to watch hundreds of questions come in, the ones that you will always see constantly is people separating out their running backs and quarterbacks, like not pairing running backs with certain quarterbacks. Those two players are correlated in the sim and they're correlated in real life. And when you are much better served separating them out with a rule than trying to force them in with exposures after, because the builder was like, those players are correlated. Why are you trying so hard to separate them? And it just doesn't like that. What's the other one? There's another one I'm thinking of too. Can't remember. There's some other like classic question we get Sunday mornings where it's like two players that are conventionally correlated. I don't know. We don't even need to talk about that anyway, but. Larson, let me know if that helps. So there is hopefully, I mean, there is a little bit, like you can definitely do the exposures way here, especially if it's just for a couple players here and there. But I think a rule of that is more descriptive of what types of players, and your rule could be whatever. You don't have to copy mine. Like if it's players above a certain projection, right? You could do projection. You can do percentiles. I've experimented with that a little bit as well. Like whatever you want to do. So. Okay. YouTube chat. Alan, how do you recommend looking at data on a previous slate? Do you recommend shrinking your player pool? How much exposure should you have to your most popular golfer? All right, three different questions here. Well, let's hit all of them. Let's do how to look at a previous slate. I recommend contest flashback. Very much so. This, I think, is the best way to use... Let me bounce back to this slate. Okay, this is how I would recommend reviewing a previous slate. So the main reason why is because this is a process that is, it kind of creates the semblance of a larger sample size for a single slate. When you're looking at, I think the biggest mistake people make when they're just reviewing their DFS process in general, at large, is trying to reverse engineer the perfect lineup for what actually ended up happening on the slate, which was just one of many, many outcomes and will often lead you down the wrong kind of rabbit hole. Flashback replays the slate using the real lineups actually played by your opponents and then simulates the slate back out 100,000 times. You get a sense of what actually were the strongest lineups for the widest range of possible outcomes. And that's how I recommend doing this. So what I always tend to do is I open up the contest that I actually played here. I pull it up and I will look to compare how I played relative to other maxers of the contest. So there's my name at the top. If you entered using SaberSim, it should be pinned up there at the top for you. I will filter by other 150 maxers and see, looking at the Sim ROI column. The Sim ROI column is how much money did that player's portfolio make for them on average across 100,000 iterations. And you can see on this slate, I lost money. I lost $37. I was expected to be profitable over the long term. And if you actually look, my median outcome was actually losing about $100. I lost $37. I actually had above average slate here, losing money, which can be a nice thing to set expectations and get a sense of what these outcomes actually look like here. If you're asking me, how is it possible that your average outcome was losing $100 and you have a 14% ROI, you can scroll over here and see the 99th percentile outcome for me was $3,300 of profit. This is in the big, $2,700 of profit. This is in the big $3 mega, or I guess you could see it right there, the micro, mighty, mini, max. The micro, mighty, mini, max, micro millions. If you're unsure what we're looking at here. To be specific, it's kind of a funny micro, mighty, mini, max, micro millions. MLB micro, mighty, mini, max, micro millions is the contest we're looking at here, if you were unsure. So that's where the profit comes from, the 99th percentile. So that's level one, right? That's I think reviewing your process. And what do I get out of this? I know that I played in a way that is expected to make me money over the long term. And I know what that looks like. I know that I should expect to lose money playing this contest over and over again. And this is what the win, the 99th percentile, the top 1% outcome is. This is what it looks like. And then you start thinking top 1%, that's about a once out of every 100 slates outcome, right? You're obviously going to have days that are better than that mixed in there, but I had an above average day on this slate and lost $37. So now when you can almost kind of then think about it from a bankroll management standpoint of like, you know, I kind of need, if I were to play this contest every single day, I would need probably about 100 days before I see this actually happen. And it's still not guaranteed. That's not how probability works, right? But this is the top 1% outcome. So I probably want to see at least 100 slates before this outcome actually pays off. And I should be prepared for an average outcome with some up and downs mixed in there of losing $100 each day in between there. So a $1,000 downswing playing this every single day is more than possible. And that's kind of almost the median outcome before you have the big win. So you can kind of see like, okay, can I afford this contest? And I actually think that's even understating it because this contest costs $333 to max. I actually think a $10,000 downswing playing 100 days, not $1,000. So that's actually, yeah. So if you didn't have a $10,000 bankroll, right? Like you probably shouldn't be playing this contest would be the way that I would look at it at a minimum, because you need to be able to have a $10,000 downswing kind of. Again, we're doing some bro science math here, but like with a negative $100 expected on median profit waiting for your 100 days of playing it to get here. Anyway, going in a circle here now. But these numbers, I think when I first started using Flashback, I was very tunnel visioned on Sim ROI. And what I recommended people was like, go into Flashback, Sim ROI is positive, you're good to go. Keep playing, keep trucking, it'll all work out. And I think that's true at some level. But I also think it's important to understand, okay, what does your 99th percentile outcome actually look like? And how often should you expect to see that? What does the average day look like playing this contest, right? And like, how often should you expect to see that? And just getting a sense of what the actual variance looks like here. I think that's useful. The other thing you can use for contest Flashback here is actually just like studying other players. And a lot of my little tricks and tips and things that I give out to people for, you know, our YouTube videos and things like that are things that I've just learned by studying what other sharps are doing. So I tend to like to go seeing what the top 150 maxers are doing in the big GPP for a given day. So Shady Advice is always popping up there. I like looking at Kurt in our Discord server, OCDOBV. I like looking at his lineups too. I mean, there's a lot of recognizable names that you'll see up here, but I use this here. I'll filter on a particular player and just take a look and see what they did. I have found this particularly interesting for stack types in baseball. This I find really interesting. It's not every top 150 maxer follows the same way that Shady tends to do this, but I have found it very interesting thinking about my stack constructions by looking at some of these top players here and just seeing what they're doing on the slate. You see Kurt's a little more spread out into a wider variety, but still 5-2 at the top for this slate. So you can learn from other players. And I think the easiest way to think about that is, what were the actual questions you had when you were building your lineups for a slate? Well, check back the next day and see what did the best 150 maxers do regarding those questions. So the two things I found it most useful for are stack types and salary usage for dupe sports. That's where I've used Flashback as like a research tool the most. So Jay said, when you late swap, do you have to change uniques again? Yeah, you do. Simple one there. You will have to, if you want to retain the same number of min uniques, you will have to reset that. The one thing to keep in mind there is, sometimes it doesn't end up affecting anything, because if you have, like, let's say you set 4 min uniques required before lock and you're swapping lineups where most of your players have already started playing, those uniques are kind of like hard coded into the lineup now already at that point. So it doesn't matter what min uniques are set at. All of your lineups in your portfolio might be 4 uniques apart. So on the flip side, sometimes it can be hard for lineups to re-attain their uniques. I guess not. There's just a limited number of players in the player pool as the slate is going on. So as you're late swapping, so if all of your uniques were in players that are haven't started yet, and you're late swapping before the last two games, sometimes it can be hard to re-reach those uniques potentially. But that's only for a handful of lineups, and I wouldn't worry about that too much. But short answer, yes, you do need to reset uniques. Samuel says, what's the best way to use min uniques for WNBA? Yeah, this is an interesting question, because some of the tools at our disposal are not available to us for WNBA here. Mostly meaning like the simulations themselves. So we just have the projections in here. So we don't have projections yet for today. Let's go back to yesterday, pre-game slate. So yeah, this is a good question. Oh, and also you're setting min uniques up front because you're building on optimizer mode. It is, I think, 6 player lineups, right? 6 or 7. I think it's six players for WNBA. Honestly, this is kind of a janky answer, but I would probably take inspiration from other sports where you play 6 player lineups and say that I would probably play about 2 min uniques. And that's like just like a rule of thumb heuristic that I'm kind of making up on the spot here. But in golf and MMA and other sports where you play a lineup of 6 players, I've found that for multi-entry stuff, I like to play 2 min uniques. It feels like that probably would work pretty well here as a light way to help diversify you. If you're playing 20 or less lineups, you could probably do 3 min uniques and be all right. But yeah, it's not the most satisfying answer. That is the answer. That's what I would probably do. John says, when creating your build for the Sims, are you using the contest you're playing as the primary sim, or are you building a generic pool prior to adding your Sims? Let me read this again. When you are creating your build for the Sims, are you using the contest you're playing as the primary sim, or are you building a generic pool prior to adding your Sims? To me, those read as kind of the same thing, and maybe that gives you your answer. So like if we were playing, you know, this slate and I was playing, you know, let's say the $3 again, I would probably like set my initial build to look like this and I would build, and that would immediately be my working build, that ultimately these were going to be where I filled my lineups from, but it would also be my self sim field lineups, right? So I would actually literally, you know, I would build this and I would have a contest sim tucked in here where build two was my field lineups. And I would sim this against itself in addition to the normal contest sim. Right. So something like that. That's how I would kind of set this up. And you could also, I mean, this should actually probably be the $3. Like this should be matched up. Oh, that's the 1 cent. Is this it? I don't know. Maybe this is it. I think that's the 50 cent, but like you get the idea. So this is how I would set this up. And then I'd run both of those contest sims and I would filter out lineups that weren't profitable in both. So it needs to have it, both ROIs that come out of this need to be above zero for a given lineup for it to stay in my pool. And then I would ultimately, you know, I'd then diversify with min uniques, filter, and so on. If you are making a lot of changes to your desired exposures before you build, or you're changing player projections, or you're setting a bunch of lineup rules, or doing, like if you're doing the main point of this, I mentioned this on Friday as well, the main point of this is not to just run your lineups against themselves just to say you did. It is to create a plausible field using SaberSim as your baseline. And so it just so happens that in my process, the build that is ultimately going to fill my entries is also the good plausible field to use as the baseline. But if you're making a lot of adjustments to your build before you kick it off, maybe that's not the case anymore. Rather than that being a plausible way that the field might play, that's a plausible way you might play. It doesn't work that way anymore. It doesn't work as well that way. So, yeah. So follow up from John: would it matter what sim is starred? No, it doesn't actually. It just straight up doesn't. What the starred does is it controls what ROI you are using if you create a custom metric. So if you create a custom metric and you see ROI down here, that star indicates, and you'll see it if you hover it, that it's the default sim for custom metrics. It otherwise has no functionality, and it honestly probably will go away soon-ish, because the goal is to just add the ability to use other ROIs or other custom multiple contests and metrics in a custom metric. So that is literally all that means. So it doesn't matter in this context. Samuel said, post-build, when you compare the player's total pool exposure to ownership, is there positive leverage? If there's positive leverage, is that actionable information? What's the correct way to interpret that information? Yeah, good question. Let's see. Let's bounce back here and look at this. I think it's tough. So, like, let's find somebody that played this well. Whoops. 150. So you can use it this way. I think you just have to be careful of, like, reading into this too much, because we have the information now. So I'm trying to think about the right way to answer this. Like, I think at one level you can look at this and say, okay, Shady here got over the field on Boston and the Yankees and was under on the Rays, and say, okay, and his portfolio was profitable, so like that was the right way to play. But it's at that point, I think you need to be careful not writing in intentionality into that. Like, that sometimes that's because a player played in a very balanced way, which it looks like this portfolio was, and the field ended up kind of just making the mistakes of underplaying those two stacks. And you kind of played this like game theory optimal approach where you just let the field make mistakes and kind of just, it just worked out. it doesn't necessarily mean that that was a spot that was like identified and you can learn from that. And also, I don't even know necessarily what you would learn from that, right? Like, it clearly the lesson is not, oh, play the Yankees and Red Sox on every slate because they're going to be under-owned, right? That's not it. I think you could potentially come up with patterns like, okay, in this spot, maybe one of the lessons here is that teams are going to come in under-owned relative to their expectation when they put out a terrible lineup, like the whatever this Yankees lineup was yesterday, right? Maybe, but you'd probably want to see more data and see this pattern show up in multiple slates of Flashback before you just decided that that was true. So this is kind of why on Flashback, I prefer to look for things that I think are a little bit more like clear-cut examples of somebody doing a thing. So I think stack types translate pretty well. And I think salary usage in dupe sport translates well because you can just really see what a player has done to limit their builds or to set certain thresholds in a way that I think is a little more actionable. So, but it's a tricky one. Like your question, I think is exactly right. If there's positive leverage, is that actionable information? Like, I don't know if it is when you're looking at ownership discrepancies versus exposures. So, I mean, one thing you can get out of it too is like you will see a spectrum of different players doing this. There are players that will take more extreme stands. There are players that will not. And you can kind of see this. I'm trying to look to see if there's anybody that like I know probably did play aggressively with their exposures. Where's Giant Squid? Oh, there he is. I'm sure his are. There you go. So you want to see somebody that is taking a stand. There, Giant Squid took a stand, right? Tampa Bay in New York. This is just generally true of his play style in general as well. So, but he didn't grade out as profitable, right? In the post-contest sim. So maybe there is a lesson there. I think like a lot of it is, can you safely read intentionality into the exposures and know what to do with that information? I don't know. I don't know. That's a tough question. Samuel said, thanks, Jordan. Ironically is playing golf as my main DFS sport and being six player, I tend to do 3-min uniques. Yeah. I think 3-min uniques again is probably fine for like 20 lineups or less. Yeah, I think it's fine. Raph said, what's that going to do for the mobile functionality of it? The star in the contest sim? I don't know. Does that do something on mobile? Whatever it is, I promise we won't break it. if that starred function has some additional mobile functionality that I'm forgetting, we'll preserve whatever that is somehow. This isn't something that's like gonna happen today or this week or like we haven't even started doing this. I know Matt and I and Chris, like all of us that are doing these self sims now kind of want this functionality. So I think it will likely get added at some point. But if we'll figure out a solution that makes sense and retains any existing functionality accordingly there. So yeah, it's fun to be back doing these every once in a while. Been a little while, but Marshall won the $3 minimax on Wednesday. Congrats. Very good. Oh, Samuel said, sorry, I didn't mean in contest Flashback. I meant when you run a new build, enter the max amount of lineups possible. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's even a better question. Man, I wish. Okay. I should have. I think you wrote it the right way. I think there is. I think there is. And often you will see comparing those two things to each other as an explanation for what you are seeing in a contest sim. So let's go back to this build here. And let's kind of set this up using the normal contest sim, using the regular field. And look at the top 150 lineups. So the pool exposure in this context is basically how often was that player in a lineup, the best possible GPP lineup for this slate, right? Out of 5,000. It is not literally like an optimal rate or but it can kind of be thought of as approximating like a how likely they are to be in the winning lineup rate. And when you compare that to the ownership projection, you will often get a sense of the leverage, and you will often get an explanation for why your exposure is a certain way, right? Now, it's not an exact science, but I think it kind of works this way. So let's see if we can find somebody where there's a big discrepancy here. Hang on, let me change this back and forth. Let's look at the highest owned. Okay, so we actually kind of liked the chalk on this slate, so it's a little tricky here. Also, I'm actually a little surprised by some of these numbers. Oh, I know what happened here. We are using live sims. One thing I'll just mention this. If you are going back in the past and running kind of a process from the start to try to figure out like what you could have done on a given slate or something like that, or maybe different ways to play a different slate, be mindful of these toggles, these use live sims if available, use live field lineups if available. When those are on, they will be using they will basically be feeding in data that we had at the end of the slate back into your contest sim. So you can see how my top lineup here is a 10,000% ROI. That is because the contest sim at this point is using what actually happened as the possible outcomes for a player. So you're getting the players that actually scored well to the top of your ROI list. So I'm going to actually run this again using the real contest sims, because I want to show you what this is doing. But yes, basically to summarize, for David Hamilton, for example, when he's showing up in 12.3% of the pool and we expect him to be in 20% of the lineups in the contest, yes, SaberSim is identifying a negative leverage opportunity there of saying he's overowned. Doesn't necessarily mean full fade. It doesn't necessarily mean you want 0%. But probably using the contest sims, you will come in under on this player. So, and in fact, a long, long time ago, some of the OGs in the chat will remember the research build. The premise of the research build was like literally compare your pool exposure to the ownership projection and use that as a way to decide what stands you want to take. Look for players that are over leveraged or under leveraged with that method. That was like a cornerstone of my process for a long time using SaberSim. And the reason it isn't as much anymore is because it solves for something, or it is approximating something that the contest sim solves for in a more direct way. So, did it? I feel like it's still pulling in the live data somehow here. It's not changing at all. Oh, maybe it is changing a little. What happens with Saber score and pool exposure disagree in leverage? Like you have a player that's positive leverage in the entire pool versus ownership, but negative when you sort with Saber score. Let me think about this here. So Saber score, I think, should take precedent over pool, over comparing these two numbers. Because Saber score is going to take into account ownership and upside percentiles in a way. Wait, let me actually think about this. So that is true. It is also at a lineup level. So the important thing to remember is like these are descriptive of individual players or even potentially stacks, but they're not lineup based metrics. Whereas SaberScore is attempting to quantify the quality of the lineup overall. So it will do a better job, I think, of deciding your approach to handling a particular player holistically, because it's looking at lineups that contain that player as a whole, than trying to figure out how you want to make a stand on every individual player here. I would instead think about this as a data point available to you amongst the rest of your research that you're doing. So how I've recommended people do this in the past is, I think a lot of your research that you do should be targeted at your highest and lowest leverage players in your pool. These are the players that you're taking the biggest stands on. You should be comfortable with the risk associated with this. So after you've diversified with min uniques, so maybe your min uniques is at 5 for this slate, you should be comfortable with these Yankees being your big stands, right? If you're not, you should bring their maximum exposure down. A lot of the ways that I look at the pool versus ownership here is when looking at my negative leverage stands as a way to kind of decide, like, do I want more exposure there? Using the pool versus the ownership projection as like a kind of a guidepost, right? Like Rafaela here, 1.5% of the pool showing up in the 11%, showing up as owned by 11% here, right? Like this just, there just aren't a lot of lineups that contain this player in the pool, and it's not really a good player that I would be inclined to get additional exposure to. But if my research was maybe reading me towards some more raised stacks, right? Well, Arozarena showing up in 11% of the pool. Sure, he's going to be owned in 18%, but there's 542 lineups there. There's probably other lineups with other Rays. We've got Rosario showing up here, like 6 to 16. Like, I kind of think about the pool exposure from this lens of, are there literally lineups in my pool available to me to get exposure to these players? If other research you're doing is also taking you that direction. Like, let's say you were building lineups for this slate, and you were listening to a show, a Live Before Lock show, or you read something and you're like, okay, I kind of think I want to get some Red Sox and Rays, and Sabersimp's not giving me any. And you come over here and you're looking at this. I would probably give you a thumbs up on the Rays and say, sure, there's lineups in the pool. They're showing up in the pool often enough. Go ahead. On the Red Sox, I'd be like, well, are you sure? Like, maybe that's the one you want to do a little bit more research on, because we're just not getting a lot of these guys here, at least some of them. You know, Duran, maybe you're getting some exposure to, but like, that's kind of the way I think about it, is that pool exposure can kind of help give you some ideas of situations where you want to just disagree with what you're getting on Saber score. I think you can answer that question of, should you actually do that, or will you run into trouble if you do that, is how many lineups in your pool are you actually getting there. So let me know if that helps. Two Samuels firing away at me here. There used to be a satellite build mode, and for the free contest, that used to be the recommended way to play them. Since we don't have it, what's the way to play the free contest for satellites? I actually end up playing satellites kind of the same way I play GBPs now, where I build them. Like, when I play satellites, I tend to just pack them in with my... What I tend to do is, let's say I'm playing 150... I'm playing like a mini max or something, and I'm also playing 10 satellites. I will often just find 150, use these contest sims, do all that good stuff, and just toss in, just let 10 lineups randomly from my pool be duplicated into those satellites. That's how I do it. If you wanted to do a contest sim for it, I think like strictly the optimal way of doing it would be to use the winner take all field lineups and use an actual satellite payout structure. And if I was playing like a big, oh, that percent to first is not great. Okay. I think you should actually use a custom payout structure, because that percent to first is not always gonna, but let's say you're playing a 100 man satellite or like a live final qualifier, where you really want to make sense. You really want to make sure you're particularly picking up on the payout structure. You want to do something like that. So, but the satellites I tend to play when I mix them in are like lower stakes. A lot of times they're like, maybe they overlaid a little bit. I'm not super worried about perfectly optimizing for them, so I just throw in lineups from my GPP build into those. But if you were playing like a higher stakes live finals qualifier or something that you really kind of cared about on its own, the contest sim settings are more important than the slider settings for getting that right. So I would just build using the GPP. Oh, I guess there is still a satellite setting. It changes very little. But getting the contest sim settings is the more important part there. So. We are 9 minutes over. I didn't even realize it's kind of flown by here today. I do need to run. I'm going to see if I missed. Okay, there was one more question here from Chuck. If there are any final last second questions, you can drop them into the chat now. I'm going to get out of here pretty quick, but I wanted to touch on this one point here for Chuck. To clarify, I don't have a self-sim in my process yet. I should also mention I'm building more lineups in a separate build, simming those lineups against the SaberSim field, eliminating negative lineups. Oh, I see. I get it. Yeah. My gut still, Chuck, is that this is probably more time consuming than you're actually getting out of it. Yeah. So what I'm thinking here is, in my mind, if you are playing, if you can play a set of 150 lineups into your contest and they're all grading out as pretty profitable and they're diversified with win uniques, why do you need, you don't need 5,000 of those, right? At the end of the day, you need 150. And so like, if you run a 5,000 lineup pool, eliminate 3,500 of them, you're left with 1,500 that grade out well. And I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. Getting tired here. And you find 150 from that, like you're good to go. You don't need that pool to be 5,000 just to say that it could have been. On the flip side, I think there is maybe an argument of like, well, maybe the worst possible lineup in your pool goes from 60% ROI to 90% ROI by creating this really, really big pool where every lineup is profitable in it. But I actually don't know if that's possible, because a lot of the lineups at the top that grade out as particularly high ROI are going to be very similar to each other anyway, even if you were doing this. So like, I don't know if you actually get the benefit after you diversify, because the top of your portfolio is, I think, probably going to be very similar to each other, even if your entire pool of 5,000 lineups is grading out as profitable. I could be wrong. I haven't done this personally, so I don't know what it like tends to look like once you actually assemble that pool. It seems very time consuming to me. I think you will probably I think you're probably spending more time than you're getting back in terms of your actual ROI. So, but John says, is there ever a time when you would use win rate versus ROI? I would not, because ROI is accounting for win rate and it's accounting for all the other ways that that lineup cashes or makes money, right? So most of the time, those are very correlated together. The lineups, the highest ROI outcome for any lineup is winning. And with the way that GPPs are structured, win rate is a very big part of ROI. But we also care about the rest of the payout structure of the contest. What does the min cash look like? What does the top 10 look like? What is the top 0.1%? What is the top 1%? So ROI captures all of the value of win rate and also all the other payout options in a way that I don't think it's worth just looking at win rate alone. Win rate's also more fragile. Especially if you're looking at really big contests, like if you're running especially as we get to football season, if you're looking at the enormous sized football contests, win rate starts to become very fragile to the number of sims that are running. Like a lineup, you know, if you're beating 100,000 opponents or something like that, a lineup winning that contest, one out of every 100,000 times is kind of break even expectation. And if you run 100,000 contest sims, like a lineup might do that two or three times and it actually might look kind of good, but in reality that lineup wasn't that good. It just like got lucky and kind of banked three times in the contest sim. But if that lineup also then never shows up in the top 1% of the contest outside of those three random banks, it'll bring the ROI back down a little and you'll be a little bit less likely to play it. But if you just sorted just by win rate, you wouldn't have captured that nuance. And that lineup might look really good, even though it kind of just got lucky. That honestly is a little bit more of a limitation of the fact that we, of the number of sims we're running in the contest sim, which is something I think we would like to increase, especially for football in the future. So that doesn't happen. If you had a perfect simulation with, you know, 100 million sims running, you wouldn't have that factor wouldn't happen as much. But that is something to be aware of for that. So, okay, that's going to be the last question. I'm going to cap it off there. We'll have Andrew back for office hours again tomorrow and the rest of the week. 4th of July, Thursday, there won't be an office hours on Thursday, but the Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and then the Saturday morning matinee show should be back here this week as well. So it's been fun hanging out with everybody here the Friday and the Monday show. Best of luck on the night slate. If you're playing a baseball night slate, kind of a light DFS day, but whatever you've got going on, good luck, and we will see y'all later. Thanks.